Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we have Dr. Matt Keener. Matt is a co-founder of Blackbird Health. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Christian. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Let's start with Blackbird Health. What problem is it solving in the market?
Thanks. The main problem we see in the market is one of a disjointed ecosystem. Mental health is this very siloed, confusing place where families really don't know where to turn, especially for their children. And so to have a comprehensive solution for pediatric mental health, where families can come to one front door and get a tailored solution for whatever's ailing their child and get them on the right, sort of right next step to a sustainable long-term recovery.
And so obviously we're in the United States. I don't know if some of the challenges that exists with access to care are specific to our country or if this is something that's cultural, but what sense can you give us as to what are some of the underlying root causes for these challenges?
Well, one challenge is that you have there are multiple doors into the confusing world of mental health, but to a certain extent, you have the world of medicine and the world of therapy, and a lot of times those two things aren't connected.
Okay.
And so in order to really understand, deeply understand what's going on for your child, most families turn to their pediatricians, rightfully so, to be able to access medically trained professionals. But often there's a lack of connection between those two worlds. To have a therapeutic solution or a system that's grounded in a medical model, but has a broader awareness of what the different resources are that are available is invaluable.
And so how again, for those who are not as familiar with the space, so I would imagine one of the precursor steps is diagnosis. How difficult, not difficult, is it to diagnose an adolescent, as a pre-step? I mean, I would think that a general pediatrician may not necessarily possess the qualifications to say, hey, and they have to refer them to a specialist. Is that a right starting point?
The bread and butter, the common things are common. And thankfully, a lot of the pediatricians have some training on recognizing things like depression, like anxiety, ADHD. And yet at the same time, there's a lot of confounding factors, and they like to have a partner to move forward with in better understanding the patients. And so as a specialty service, Blackbird Health is able to work with not just families, but also work with pediatricians and pediatrics groups to be able to help augment their understanding of the child in a collaborative model.
So it sounds like you guys are solving, I would imagine you're solving a big problem, especially for families that have access issues, either because they're in a rural area or just an underserved area. And so if I understand correctly, even in the setting of a PED, you guys are helping to bridge the chasm between the neat care that's needed for a child and a specialist.
Correct. Yeah.
Great.
So we have a hybrid model that's a virtual first model that begins with a virtual intake, assessing the child in their naturalistic surroundings, right, in their home, on their phone, and then as needed or if needed, can also move into the in-person settings, brick and mortar settings, and so we have like a 75-25 approach, whereby approximately 25% of our care ends up being delivered in person. And so we have six clinical sites right now across two states, where that in-person care is provided, but with a broader sort of a virtual first front door.
And how many years have has Blackbird been in operations?
So we've had, we're going on 10 years now.
Ah, congrats.
10 years, thanks. Yeah, 10 years, 10,000 patients.
Wow. And so are there any like key, t I don't know if lessons is the right word, but key takeaways that have surfaced over the years as you've run the business and you've learned working with these cohorts?
Well, I think circling back and doubling down, you know, the I had come from working with a company called Doctor in a Man, which is at the time one of the largest providers of straight virtual care. And through our time at Blackbird, we've learned that that hybrid model really is important, and that the virtual first approach works really well. And there's those times where it really helps to have in-person services. That's been one key lesson learned.
Do you, and I'm curious, and it may be difficult to weigh in, but do you feel like there are just limitations on virtual, or that just being face to face, there's some additional element of having a human interaction that just is difficult to beat?
I'd say both. And I think development plays a factor. And so having a service, you know, there are a lot of mental health services out there, but that are not necessarily developmentally informed. And so taking a developmental approach as a pediatric focused service, we take into account the developmental stage of a child, and especially with some of the younger children, to fully assess, and more so to treat moving forward, it can be helpful to have that in-person touch.
Great. I have to ask, Blackbird, why'd you choose the name?
Yeah, so it was jointly inspired. And so on the one hand, it was inspired by the Beatles song. And in particular, the line, take these broken wings and learn to fly.
Awesome.
And on the other hand, from a technology standpoint, being in admiration of the SR-71 Blackbird,
No.
the Air Force plane, which you know, was built using advanced engineering methods within just 18 months, and 40 years later, is still the fastest plane ever built and flown. And so the idea of supporting the most vulnerable through advanced technology and engineering, to me, was the joint genesis of the name.
Wow, oh, that's super creative. Very cool. I admit I originally my thoughts went to the Beatles,
Nice.
not the plane, but very, very cool. Hey, if we could take a moment, step back, would love to hear what you're I know you gave us some shade of it, but if you can give us a sense of your career progression of to what led you to starting Blackbird, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a physician by training, so I'm a psychiatrist, double boarded in adult psychiatry and child psychiatry, child and adolescent psychiatry. And actually, I'm a little bit of an anomaly because I came to medical school specifically with the goal of working in child psychiatry. I'd had the chance after college to intern with a relative at a psychiatric hospital. And I went and I interviewed the music therapist, I interviewed the art therapist, I interviewed the therapist, I interviewed the teachers. My father was a teacher, a lot of nurses in the family. Hadn't been thinking about going into medical school. I was kind of trying to figure out, I knew I wanted to help children and had an interest in brain science. And so I interviewed everyone there. And when I interviewed the psychiatrist, they pointed out that they were able to do all the different things that everyone else was doing, but also, better understand the biology of things and manage that. And so that was really attractive to me. You have to pay twice the price in a sense of time and training, but I thought it was worth it. And so so during my training, I became really interested in what is the next generation of therapy is going to look like. So I was chief resident of research at the University of Pittsburgh, and studying brain imaging and how that might relate to the identification of what we call endophenotypes, or what we call biotypes, which are kind of like what's going on underneath the surface. You could have, as an example, you might have somebody with depressive features, and they have features of depression. It could be the depression of bipolar depression, or it could be the depression of a unipolar or major depression, right? So this is like manic depressive, ups, downs. This is just depression. If you get somebody in a depressive state, you can't tell which is which. But if you have some underlying biological features or some underlying way of identifying who's who, you can better define targets or better define treatments, right? This person will need a mood stabilizer. This person might just need an SSRI, or even different types of therapy. So became really interested in that, and this was around 2012. Really saw the writing on the wall with what are the brain is a unique organ in that it's we tend to think of the brain as like software, right? With it, there's all these connections and programs being run, and the weird part thing that happens over development, much like a green tree that develops bark, over development, the brain, the computation of the brain, the thinking, the circuits become gelled, and the software writes the hardware. The thoughts we have and the patterns that we have during adolescence gel into a mature, developed, barked over brain, as it were. And so working with this organ where the software eventually creates the hardware, began to think that software development, and in particular, that software development would be the next tool in the arsenal for developing new therapies and therapeutics. And so rather than pursue, at the time I was looking at, going on to be a sort of full-time researcher, I decided to go over to the dark side, as they say, and work with commercialization of technology, and what would it look like to develop those types of therapeutics. So I briefly tried a software startup, my first startup, and that it had some great co-founders, but failed due to what a product market team fit. I think we actually succeeded in a product market fit, actually, after a bunch of different pivots and pivots and pivots. I could talk about that, but really coming down to like we didn't have the team to go after what we had established with product market fit, and especially myself as the founder. And right around the time, had a chance to work with Doctor on Demand, this booming telemedicine platform. I was the first psychiatrist hire, and I was the director of mental health there. And quickly into that time frame, realized that I didn't want to spend time chasing other people's problem, meaning the problem I was really interested in solving was child and adolescent mental health. And felt like I'd always kind of kick myself if I didn't take my lessons learned in the trenches of entrepreneurship and telemedicine to try to specifically create something for the child and adolescent market, because it's a different It's a different market than general adult psychiatry. And you could take a company like that and pivot down into or develop a product line for child and adolescents, but I felt like the kids I was seeing and working with really deserved something tailored for them and their families.
I mean, it makes good sense. One of the there has been a recurring theme on the podcast of just the value of domain knowledge for purposes of something that results in loosely success, right? When you're intimately familiar with the subject matter, you're in a better position in order to deliver value. So I think that makes complete sense. If I may, I want to come back real quick. I'm not a psychologist, layman at best on anything that has to do with human physiology, but a subject that I have heard about is neuroplasticity in the brain's ability to rewire itself. I understand that as we get older, the capability decreases.
Correct.
And so I'd just be curious to know, as you're working with adolescents, is there a time frame where, I'm making this up, prepubescent versus postpubescent would have a different impact on therapies, and how much of that has to do with just brain development or other?
Yeah, it's a great question. In general, earlier is better. Much like that tree I referenced earlier, right? The bark will accumulate over time. And yet the good thing is there are still structural brain changes that are happening into our 30s and beyond. And so the core focus of Blackbird is from those ages 2 to 26 or so. So that broader range of pediatric to adolescence. I think one of the coolest findings related to this is that when they took if it is that it's what's called experience dependent neuroplasticity. And one cool example of that is if you took 2 18-year-olds and one of them had been sitting on their parents' couch eating Doritos, playing Fortnite and not doing much else for the past 3 years, and or let's make them 19. So okay, so for the past 2 years, that's all they've been doing. And the other is coming back from Afghanistan and has actually maybe they're a young, I don't know, is that a lieutenant, right? Or somebody who's had some experience working with others, leading others, and specifically some responsibility. The brain of the latter 19-year-old is going to look a lot more like a 25-year-old. And the brain of the former is going to look a lot more like a 15-year-old, meaning that the brain through that experience and kind of like that hardware or software writing the hardware that I was talking about, the brain grows according to its demands and the responsibility placed on it and the successful execution of that responsibility. So what the things that we expose our kids to help to determine how and when the brain develops.
That makes perfect sense. It's interesting. As I was listening to you, my thoughts go to, I don't know if preventative care is the right characterization, but I think as any loving parent would do, they want the best for their kids. And being able to, I'm sure there's a clinical definition, but let's say well-functioning, productive person. It sounds like what I hear you saying is that, yeah, I mean, you can take anything too far, but as long as you're engaging your kids in activities, whether they're arts, science, there is genuine benefit
There's genuine benefit to that. Yeah, and when you include things like the mentorship experiences you have from a coach, right? The role of other caring adults besides your parents in shaping your view of what an adult should be, or the range of normative adult behavior, physical activity involved. So yeah, sports and teams and clubs. It's something I actually ask a lot of kids that I see. One of the first questions I ask is like, any sports or teams or clubs that you're involved with, right? That because we're mammals, right? We're not reptiles designed to go off and live by ourselves. We exist in groups and teams and tribes and clubs and families and companies.
We could probably devote an entire podcast.
I'm
There's
sure.
so many more questions, but
Yeah.
let me makes great sense. Any so you mentioned the company that didn't succeed. Any what were some of the key lessons as you reflect back on not having product market team fit that you would have done different?
Yeah, I mean, so for that one, that company was called Emote. Great co-founders, Johannes and Dan. Johannes is now doing human-centered AI at Stanford, and was bang super smart guy. And the team was really willing to get in the trenches, and we pivot, and pivoting on product, pivoting on market. All the while not really, and we brought in Tony, who's a great team member, and not really paying attention though to the team aspect as much, right? And so we actually landed on product market fit, which was ended up, we started off, hey, let's focus on child mental health. We ended up on a product that did sentiment analysis for financial compliance for securities companies.
Okay.
Not people had interest in it, people were willing to pay for it, not but I had zero personally, and I had zero interest in that market. And I, as a founder, I failed in sort of taking my own feelings into the mix about it, right? Like you've got the key in the lock, you've got it. Like, let's get it in the right hands for the right people, which wouldn't have been me, but I think if I could do it over again, I would have handed that off to somebody else to go do that thing, knowing that it's not my thing, but it still doesn't change the fact that we'd achieve product market fit.
Yeah, as I'm listening, I gotta imagine there's a group of founders or entrepreneurs who are listening to you and thinking to myself, yeah, we all want to get to product market fit, but let's remain conscious of what our passion is. Because
Totally. And so with Blackbird, I was really blessed and honored to be able to work in an area of my passion and skill set, and then meet a co-founder, partner, fellow founder, I guess put it that way, Amy Edgar, who had shared my same passion and interest in the same market, serving pediatric mental health. She was a nurse practitioner and mother who had experienced his health challenges with her own family, and was creating the pro like creating the like solving her own problem basically. And we met about a year into each of our respective journeys, mine with Blackbird and hers with CICS, and really saw that had really complementary skill sets, and a shared mission, and some good areas of overlap and non-overlap to be able to move forward and establish Blackbird.
fantastic. So now you're so the company's been around for 10 years. I imagine a whole host of, great lessons or takeaways during that time. What are some of the top ones that come to mind?
Well, I think the circling back on the team piece, we have a great team now and have had for quite a while. Tom Peterson, Anita Cottrell, Andrew Wood, just Nicole Garber, like the executive team, having so there's a saying in medicine, see one, do one, teach one. Meaning, like, if I'm gonna learn how to do stitches, like, first I'm gonna watch someone perform stitches, right? And then I practice on my own and I do some reading and I go, now you can go to YouTube and look things up, right? And then you do one and then you're expected to teach shortly thereafter. And so I view that a little bit of my startup experience in that, like, I got to with Doctor on Demand, I got to see one, and with Blackbird, I'm doing one, but more so, going back to the see one, very early on, I saw that the executive leadership that we were fortunate enough to be able to assemble just knew absolutely what they're doing, and very quickly were able to compassionately and gently work with us as founders, right, and co-founders, to assess our strengths and weaknesses, and but very quickly show us how it's done. So a lot of the crew had come from a company called Evolent. Some Andrew had come out of Amazon. A lot of them had worked with the advisory board and just some really top-notch blue chip companies. And so seeing them at work and their skills as a team at work has just been really impressive. And you know, something you hear, but it really is true that, like, when you there's a big difference between, like, the A plus players and even just an A player or a B player, and that where you can surround yourself with those A plus players. And so I think of myself as an A plus player as far as, like, being an early stage physician entrepreneur, but I'm actually not, like, an A plus player for a, you know, a growth state, you know, a growth stage health company right now. It's like I can find we've found executives who are just 10x compared to what I can do. And that's been a humbling lesson, but also one that's been really enjoyable as well.
I'm interested. I'm curious. Do you I understand it could be difficult to weigh in, but do you feel like you would have had the success with Blackbird had you not spent time at Doctor on Demand?
No, because I think as brief as my time was there, it was formative in my ability to, you know, because I tried the entrepreneurial thing on the first go around and just always seemed to be running up against some barriers, some of which I later realized were regional. I think there's a lot of positive things about the Pittsburgh region, but in terms of, like, connections and connections into healthcare and connections into technology, the connections into the business landscape and investors, we have smaller network of investors here. And so it was when my brother, actually, Alex Denny, connected us to, I think he really helped us plug into that more robust ecosystem that we needed to really fully tap into and grow from. And so whether that was, you know, like Tom Peterson, Frank Williams, Juan Valerino, like, I was able to connect with Amy and Patrick Kennedy. Just having these individuals who are deeply connected into a more robust ecosystem. I knew that that's where we needed to be. And so it was great to be able to take that next step. And I don't think it would have been doable if I hadn't been able to have that time to, be at this at a company that was operating sort of at a headed on a stratospheric trajectory, as it were. So I was able to say, okay, I know to get to we're going to be at 100,000 feet, and here's what that's going to look like. And having never been at altitude before, or rather, because I had been at altitude, I was able to appreciate it.
I mean, it makes good sense. It's really difficult to argue away that having experience isn't going to contribute in some way, shape, or form to what we're currently doing. And I would think that to the extent that there's overlap, it shortens the learning curve, either through pattern recognition or better understanding
It
consequences.
does. It may
I'm
not be less, it may not take away some of the pain around it, but at least it, right? You're in the depth.
going to do. That's funny. Matt, before we wrap up, if you had a chance to go back and share some wisdom with your younger self, what would you share?
Well, referencing the dip, and for any of your listeners who do not know this book, The Dip, it is absolutely recommended reading, Seth Godin, and it talks about the trajectory of efforts to reward, and that there has to be a period of time where you're working harder and it's getting more and more painful. And any good, worthwhile outcome will have that trajectory, whether it's a marathon, right? Mile 22 of the marathon has to suck more than mile 21, but that's part of what makes the finish line worthwhile. And so I had the fortune of reading that book, thanks to Dave Mawhinney over at Carnegie Mellon. But I would serve, so not only would I give that book to my younger self, but more importantly for our audience is ingest those lessons, but surface them to your partners, to your family, like so that they know what does the marathon look like. And nobody's surprised at mile 21, right? That they're coming back to you and say, no, we got you, we got this, like, just a little bit more. And but they're not expecting that at mile two. So surfacing that journey to your family so that everybody can be on the same ride
That's
and
great.
experience the same lows and the same highs, and everyone's on the same page around it.
Yeah, I think about, I don't get credit for this, but I've heard someone say that most fear is based on the unknown. And so if you can anticipate what's coming, yeah, it still may suck, but your frame of mind may be different. And now it's more of how do I manage this versus what's going to happen.
Yeah, and especially if it's heading into a period where, by definition, and if this is on the, I don't know if I'm flipped or not here, but if this is on the left-hand side, it goes like
You got
this. If this is on our right, the curve goes like this, right? But yeah, especially if you're heading to that point where it's going to be more painful. You start in the beginning of a startup, like, hey, I've got a name for a startup. Everybody's like, yay, little bit of work. Tons of reward. Like, oh, I got a URL. Yay! Like, little bit of work, tons of reward. And then fast forward to X years, and you're like, hey, by the way, so there's like three emails in your inbox from like pissed off customers, right? And if you think that that's heading in the wrong direction, you'd be gravely mistaken, right? To know that actually where you want to go, and this is another thought I'd leave you with. If you, one way to know that you're creating a good product is that people hate it. And here's why. If I told you, like, I'm going to solve your X problem, like whatever that problem is, you're going to get your hopes up. And when that doesn't fully meet your expectations, which your product won't at first, they're going to be disappointed. But that disappointment can only exist where there was a hope,
Hmm.
right? And so if people don't really care about your product or you're not getting upset, it's because they never thought you didn't really have an important problem to begin with, or they didn't really care enough about that problem that they don't care enough to get upset about that problem.
That's a great road sign. I've never thought about it in that context before, but for founders in the audience, something to think about. It's
Yeah,
a
definitely.
good problem to have.
It is. It is.
Matt, unfortunately, we have to wrap up. Before we do, anyone in your career who's had a material impact on you and you'd love to give a shout out to?
Yeah, actually, I mentioned him earlier, but Alex Denny, you should talk to Alex. He's a serial entrepreneur himself. Happens to be my stepbrother, and he's doing interesting work in the solar space right now, having exited a company in the paramedicine space, and had serial entrepreneur in healthcare, and all around one of the nicest people I've ever met, and Uber connector, just good guy to chat with. So
Well, it sounds like we're gonna have to extend an invite to Alex to come join us on the podcast.
should do.
Matt, thank you so much. Appreciate your time. If there are any members of our audience who want to get a hold of you or learn more about Blackbird, how can they find you?
Yeah, so check us out at blackbirdhealth.com. You can find me on LinkedIn, Matt Keener MD, or on X, Keenzai, KEENZAI.
Fantastic. Great stuff. Matt, thank you again. And again, for benefit of our audience, Dr. Matt Keener, co-founder of Blackbird Health. And I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder, CEO of Finstrat Management. This has been another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. Thank you.
Thanks, Christian. Keep up the great work.
My pleasure, Matt.
All right.
Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag innovators and investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.